Medical Surveillance, Part 2. Tracking the Unvaccinated. Leads to Death by Drone Strike, Really Fast. Part 1 of Medical Surveillance revealed how contact tracing evolved into databases called real-time AI ecosystems. The data stored in these ecosystems ranges from medical records to genomic sequences that were largely collected using COVID-19 PCR tests. Health privacy laws were revised to enable an alarming amount of data sharing with public and private intelligence agencies for military operations. Using the COVID-19 scamdemic as a front, the military worked with so-called health authorities to weaponize COVID-19 statistics to target non-compliant or undesirable groups with mRNA vaccines, ventilators, and remdesivir. In other words, it was a military operation that utilized covertly collected private medical and genetic data to deploy bioweapons. Targets were acquired using AI-generated predictive behavior models provided by government intelligence agencies like Palantir. If that sounds disturbing to you, keep reading, because that was just a warm-up. The delayed reaction that enabled the illusion of the pandemic of the unvaccinated. As contact tracing phased into the background and the genome collection method known as PCR testing was normalized, one more important piece of data needed to be collected: vaccination status. The Mockingbird media foreshadowed that vaccination status must be made public information because during a public health emergency, everyone has a right to know their risk. Soon, everyone would need to have a COVID-19 shot to travel, work, go to school, and participate in society. All this would inevitably lead to a vaccine passport. Yet, there was no official way to track who was vaccinated in the healthcare industry. The CDC and Medicare, CMS, announced new codes for tracking vaccination status that would go live on April 1st, 2022. The update occurred 2 years to the day the COVID-19 diagnosis code went live. April Fools. This time, the emergency update was for the purposes of tracking vaccination status. It just wasn't an emergency during the most aggressive portion of the vaccine campaign. The part where everyone had to get the shot in order for society to come out of lockdown and go back to normal. At any point during 2021, the CDC, CMS, or the AMA could stop the presses and do another emergency update to introduce a new code for vaccination status, or for adverse events for that matter. They did not. This video, captured by National File, shows the ICD-10 Coordination and Maintenance Committee meeting held in September 2021. It highlights the intent behind the implementation of the codes for COVID-19 vaccination status were for the purposes of tracking the unvaccinated. The meeting was held 6 months before the code went into effect on April 1, 2022. Note, the ICD-10 diagnosis code for SARS-CoV-2 U07.1 was planned months in advance in meetings just like this. It was almost as if the WHO or the DOD didn't want the healthcare industry to have a way to track vaccination compliance. The CDC continues to maintain a vaccine database containing individually identifiable information, but it is not available to the public. Vaccination status was surprisingly not officially tracked in the ICD-10 coding system for over a year, leaving doctors and hospital networks with their hands in the air. It effectively put all frontline health workers in the dark regarding vaccination compliance during the year in which the world was supposed to reach the elusive number that provides herd immunity. Keeping the healthcare industry in the dark on this critical data point enabled the industry to target unvaccinated individuals for deadly COVID hospital protocols and artificially inflate the number of unvaccinated individuals to make it appear it was a pandemic of the unvaccinated. The movie Vaxxed 3, Authorized to Kill, does an excellent job detailing how hospital protocols worked out. You can watch it at vaxxed3.org. Hospitals all over America that willfully murdered their patients can claim innocence using plausible deniability as an excuse. COVID kickback money does not only reward hospitals for following orders, it also works to keep people quiet. Data mining for passports is not just about vaccines. An emergency code update for a code with no monetary value assigned baffled the healthcare information industry. There was a financial motive behind the COVID diagnosis, U07.1, because it unlocked CARES Act funding. Vaccination status codes are in a chapter titled Factors Influencing Health Status and Contact with Health Services. The industry trend in coding is not to spend time assigning them because there's no money in it. If there was a financial incentive behind tracking vaccination status, it wasn't immediately clear. If money isn't the motive, then what is? The Factors Influencing Health chapter is being rebranded Social Determinants of Health, or SDOH. More on that later. Examples of codes in this chapter are Z20.6, Contact with and Suspected Exposure to Human Immunodeficiency Virus, or HIV, Z20.822, Contact with and Suspected Exposure to COVID-19, Z76.5, Conscious Simulation of Illness or Malingerer, Z87.890, Personal History of Sex Reassignment, and Z63, Other Problems Related to Primary Support Group, including Family Circumstances. This one is often used for problems related to divorce. The biggest threat is that tracking vaccination status means sharing sensitive medical information with military and intelligence agencies without the person's knowledge or consent. Even Robert Malone, not a fan, said your vaccination status should be private in an opinion piece he published about the update. No less than 10 members of Congress brought concerns to the attention of the CDC over the unprecedented amount of personal data sharing before the Z codes were published. The CDC refused to answer. When a FOIA was sent to them by the Epoch Times, the response stated the CDC does not have access to vaccination status codes. As they tend to do, that was only a partial truth designed to misdirect people. The CDC has a vaccination tracking system called IIS that claims to be only population-level data. It specifies usage of vaccination data is for surveillance and target interventions. Quote, it would most certainly be a HIPAA violation, for example, for healthcare professionals to share patient info with non-HIPAA entities like the FBI for tracking purposes, unquote. USA Today fact check. The official excuse from health agencies is that vaccination status is important to monitor because it's a risk factor for the patient and the provider. They claim individuals cannot be tracked because individually identifiable data must be removed before it is sent to the database. The CDC clearly doesn't want to tip you off about how easily your data can be re-identified. Along with the demand to collect statistics on all things COVID-related, comes an interoperability initiative from Medicare, CMS. All that juicy data stored at each healthcare institution is useless from a public health perspective unless that information can be quickly and easily shared. That is what CMS's FHIR regulations are all about. Providers and healthcare networks alike must install APIs, application program interfaces, that enable data exchange between the provider and external entities. In other words, APIs allow different programs at different organizations to talk to each other. Data must also be shared with third-party software developers that supply the tech. suppliers of APIs do not have to be HIPAA-covered entities, which opens the healthcare industry up to major privacy liabilities. What happens if sensitive data is leaked through one of these APIs? The most disruptive data breaches are from third-party vendors that supply these APIs, according to a National Security Advisor, or AHA. Data mining has been the trajectory of medical records since Obamacare went into effect. But now, the personal lives of all Americans are for sale. Alex Karp, the CEO of Palantir, a tech company that specializes in data mining, admits it himself. Quote, "So can your vaccination status be accessed by federal health agencies? Yes. Can that information be identifiable? Absolutely, yes. Does that mean that you, as an individual, could be surveilled and or get caught in a forced vaccination dragnet or end up experiencing negative repercussions in other areas of your life due to vaccination status? Probably." Unquote. Ransoming your biometrics data. HHS Protect, the real-time database that was used to assign threat risk scores used to deploy countermeasures such as vaccines and ventilators, has become a permanent program. If the pandemic is over, then why is a military surveillance operation still in effect? Despite enormous pushback from medical professionals and members of Congress, it became mandatory. The DOD and Department of Homeland Security are ultimately directing the program, and they want their data. So much so that financial disincentives were levied against healthcare providers to ensure they get it. If a healthcare provider fails to share required information in a timely manner, they are committing information blocking. Disincentives are leveraged under the Cures Act, which was originally published in 2016. The act is all about fast-tracking the development of drugs and devices, including countermeasures, based on monitoring real-world evidence. Quote, "The law builds on FDA's ongoing work to incorporate the perspectives of patients into the development of drugs, biological products, and devices in FDA's decision-making process. Cures enhances our ability to modernize clinical trial designs using the use of real-world evidence and clinical outcome assessments, which will speed the development and review of novel medical products, including medical countermeasures." Unquote. For a long time in my coding career, I recall hearing about a program called Meaningful Use for Electronic Records. It sounded like the most mundane program ever invented. It only caught my attention because the bigwigs liked to carry on about what an annoyance it was. The program created a lot of busy work spent trying to prove our institution was using the electronic record in a meaningful way, whatever that means. At the time, I had no idea about the financial incentives behind jumping through all those meaningful use hoops. The program dates back as far as 2011. Surprise, surprise, this is where reporting the Z codes for tracking vaccination status pays dividends. All the SDOH codes qualify for meaningful use incentive payments. Codes in this chapter are not just for vaccination status, but for socioeconomic problems. The other really cool trick is that it does not need to be a physician diagnosing anything, because the codes do not reflect conditions. Anyone with rights to document can record something in the record that could be reflected with a Z code. It could be a nurse, a social worker, or the ambient listening AI could overhear something you told your family member over the phone while you were waiting for your doctor. That is all it would take for that information to end up in your permanent medical record. Since we are talking about a tracking program that assigns people risk scores based on behavior, it might be a good idea to understand what socioeconomic factors could be reported and used against you. There are codes for non-compliance with medical care, social problems, homelessness, and financial stress. Computer-assisted coding programs can auto-code these SDOH without a human to verify the context. These SDOH factors are not only monetized, they are required to be reported to HHS Protect. There is also a merit-based incentive program, or MIPS, for surgeons. Much the same as the other programs, surgeons are rewarded handsomely for reporting certain quality measures or data registry measures, that's your virus and cancer tracking. Of note, surgeons that are not directly employed with the hospital network may be subject to the value-based purchasing program that is known for bankrupting hospitals if they don't vaccinate their staff. All this should show you what enormous lengths the medical industrial complex has taken to manipulate the behavior of healthcare providers and institutions. They are motivated to record your sensitive data and essentially encouraged to leak it to as many public-private partners as possible. Does it make more sense now why your doctor asks all kinds of dumb questions about vaccination status, housing situation, and gender identity at every visit? Vaccine passports have transformed into digital ID. The media openly talked about making a vaccine passport system a requirement to re-enter society and for travel. If it were true, AHIMA would be the agency leading the charge because they are the gatekeepers of medical information, similar to a librarian at your local library. In JAHIMA, the agency's peer-reviewed journal, were multiple articles discussing how to share sensitive information with the world. The think tanks decided a passport program would be as simple as downloading an app and receiving a QR code, which could be scanned at a point of entry. AHIMA's job was to ensure the adoption of infrastructure and policies to enable the data sharing. At the G20 summit held in November 2022, world health leaders, I use that term loosely, schemed to create a digital vaccine passport system based on criteria set forth by the WHO. It would require international travelers to have a digital vaccine passport ID on their mobile phone. Along those same lines, an act called the Improving Digital Identity Act was passed in 2020. It was sponsored by Bill Foster. The Patient ID Now Coalition was launched the same year. The coalition is a group of healthcare organizations with the goal of advancing a national strategy to address patient identification. AHIMA is, of course, a member. They are leading the charge right on cue. There was a COVID-19 coalition, which was disbanded after the end of COVID. As mentioned in part one, the public-private partnership virus seems to affect these global organizations frequently. Organizations like the COVID-19 coalition tend to be dissolved and re-emerge sometime later under a new name. It would appear that the organizations framing the narrative wised up to the growing public rejection of vaccine passports. It is possible the Patient ID Now coalition is the COVID-19 coalition with a slightly different lineup. From 2020 to 2022, the biggest change in policy and terminology is the switch from using the term vaccine passport to digital ID. The WHO is similarly moving away from calling them vaccine passports and into calling them a digital health certificate. The Improving Digital ID Act continued into at least 2023, and it led to another act called the Match IT Act of 2024. The Match IT Act establishes a minimum data set in which to issue universal digital health certificates. Every patient gets a universal medical record ID, which can be used to identify the patient across institutions and regulatory agencies alike. It is essentially your medical record ID, driver ID, physical address, and email address all in one. The Patient ID Now Coalition was instrumental in passing the law and specifically thanked Bill Foster for his support. the same man who sponsored the original Digital ID Act. Michael Navratakis of CHD's The Defender recently warned that vaccine passports could be right around the corner. The EU is moving forward with their vaccine passports, and they are tied to bank accounts. As many have warned, vaccine passports are about controlling behavior on a mass scale. In other words, it is a social credit system. If your social media posts get out of line, or you go outside your approved geolocation zone, 15-minute city, you could quickly find your privileges are cut off. America doesn't appear to be far behind. Indeed, the HHS Protect program has a section for geolocation monitoring in real time. All the policies around digital ID are under the direction of the Department of Homeland Security and the DOD, supposedly because an unvaccinated person poses a national security threat. Alrighty then, what kind of countermeasures do they intend to throw at us? It leads to death by drone. Don't think for a second that the narrative about how automating the world with AI will improve efficiency won't apply to absolutely everything. We're not just talking about the cashier at McDonald's or how automated medical coding and billing will impact the industry. We are talking about how automation will apply to military operations for the purposes of national security. Part 1 established geolocation was happening in real time without your knowledge or consent for the alleged purposes of contact tracing. In Part 2, we learned those military operations are still in play. Contact tracing was carried out under national security measures. Privacy restrictions have been systematically removed to promote real-time data sharing. The key player is a military intelligence contractor that specializes in AI for total information awareness, Palantir. The major software companies that provide electronic medical record software, Epic, Optum, 3M, and Cerner, are partnered with Palantir directly and indirectly. These are the programs that dutifully track vaccination status and other social determinants of health. It's a matter of national security, they say. So are digital IDs. Palantir has been a longtime partner of the CDC for a COVID vaccine biosurveillance program named HHS Protect. The contract was for Palantir to deliver surveillance software, and the program they produced is called Tiberius. AI software is often only good at one task. Programs are built within a program to handle multiple tasks, much like the movie Inception. It is common operating procedure to enlist multiple programs that work in tandem. The other program utilized in HHS Protect is called Gotham. Tiberius assigns targets a risk score, while Gotham's function is to locate and autonomously decide when to deploy countermeasure attacks. Gotham is also used by police, ICE, and the military for target acquisition in various applications, including for AI-powered kill chains. Quote, Gotham enables the autonomous tasking of sensors from drones to satellites based on AI-driven rules or manual inputs for human-in-the-loop control. Unquote. Palantir received internal pushback over their work with ICE, but it hasn't stopped them. Some have gone so far as to accuse Palantir of enabling crimes against humanity with their tech. Regardless of your position on the immigration issue, the fact remains that if Palantir's AI can be used to target illegal immigrants, it can be used to target anyone for any reason. It could be programmed to target anti-vaxxers, or give you a threat risk score based on your social credit. Ethnic groups were disproportionately targeted using Palantir's tech during COVID. The precedent has already been set. Palantir is currently looking to start a consortium to monopolize defense contracts. Gizmodo refers to the partners as the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Palantir only makes the tech. It is the Pentagon that will be using them to target national security threats. It might be time to start asking what kind of behavior makes you a target when the national security threat is a virus. Is it breaking lockdown orders? Or is it failing to pass a PCR test or refusing a vaccine? There is no shortage of controversial projects in Palantir's closet. Let's drag Project Maven out, for example. Project Maven was a Pentagon contract with the goal of developing autonomous killer drones. Google was originally awarded the contract, but mass outcry from employees forced Google to back out of the lucrative project. Palantir stepped in and swooped up the contract. Likewise, Palantir's employees had grave ethical concerns about the company's involvement. Unfazed by concerned employees, Palantir's president, Shyam Sankar, described Project Maven as this generation's Manhattan Project. The Manhattan Project brought us the world's first atomic bomb. Similarly, Palantir believes its work developing autonomous killer drones is as important as the race for nukes. And this was all the way back in 2018. Employees of Palantir were even more disturbed over the company's involvement in the Israel and the Ukraine wars. This time, disgruntled employees voted with their feet by leaving the company. Palantir CEO Alex Karp unapologetically expressed his loyalty for Israel when asked how he felt about the employees leaving. He said it is a consequence of maintaining a position. In blue-collar speak, that means get on board or get out. Making killer drones for Israel is the priority. The most alarming issue with the drone assassination tech is that human verification and decision-making have been almost entirely removed. One of the goals of using autonomous killer drones is to avoid spending manpower locating targets and verifying them. Letting the AI make decisions means there will be errors. An acceptable error rate was set at 10%. In medical coding, employees must meet 90% accuracy or face termination. The magic accuracy number is the same for autonomous killer drone programs. The verification process for before hitting the kill switch on the Where's Daddy program was simply to listen for a male voice. An officer reported it took 20 seconds or less per target. Even more regrettably, collateral damage to the Hamas operative's family and bystanders is expected. Allowing the AI to make decisions to kill has led to indiscriminate killing of women and children. Israeli intelligence officers told 972 Mag they were using an autonomous drone assassination program called Lavender. It is an AI-powered kill chain program. Lavender was primarily used to identify Hamas operatives and put them on a kill list. Another program called Where's Daddy locates the operative in their home and sends an autonomous drone to their house. Almost exactly how the HHS Protect program uses Tiberius to put the target on the list and Gotham to execute the target. Quote, the IDF essentially treated the outputs of the AI machine as if it were a human decision. This was despite knowing that the system makes errors in approximately 10% of cases and is known to occasionally mark individuals who have merely a loose connection to militant groups or no connection at all. Unquote. Palantir's Alex Karp and Peter Thiel may or may not have provided the autonomous killer drone programs to Israel. The contracts are under seal, but the parallels between Palantir's software products and Israel's deadly new tech are suspiciously similar. Turns out, Alex Karp wasn't lying when he said our programs are dangerous and lives have been taken using our technology. Drone assassination is not new. It has been occurring for over 20 years now. Palantir is just the latest company to jump in on the bandwagon. As the tech develops, different features will be explored. payloads of drones may switch from guided missiles to more sinister payloads. Drones could soon deliver payloads of vaccines, aerosols, and possibly even a swarm of mosquito-like drones. It might sound far-fetched to think of vaccine delivery drones in healthcare, but there have already been studies on it. It has even been proposed to enlist an Internet of Drones for hospital supply chains. Meanwhile, Gavi is busy using AI to predict vaccines. Houston Methodist Research Institute partnered with CEPI to design vaccines against viruses with pandemic potential. CEPI is now hard at work on an AI-generated vaccine library. Palantir's behavior modeling software that is used in Israel for indiscriminate drone bombing has already been used during military operations to identify targets in America. The threat in America is a possible pandemic, which would become a national security breach. Palantir and the other members of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse are well entrenched at every level, from the DoD to the entire healthcare industry. AI would be used to generate countermeasures, such as vaccines and antibodies, likely with the same 10% acceptable error rate as the autonomous drones in Israel. Regulatory agencies are likely to justify any collateral damage in the name of national security. Vaccine passports are well underway. They have been rebranded digital IDs, but they come with the same conditions as the dreaded vaccine passport. Conditions will be complete with real-time geolocation, genomic, and socio-behavioral surveillance. Your government and health authorities take this surveillance so seriously, they fine organizations that commit the offense of data blocking. The organizations behind the surveillance software have a track record of using it for indiscriminate murder by drone strike. Time to start asking ourselves how to stay off the kill list, or more importantly, how to avoid becoming collateral damage.